Welcome to the SCMS Classical Conversation Podcast, taped live at the 2019 SCMS Winter Music Festival. I'm King FM's Dave Beck, and I hope you enjoy these in-depth conversations with festival musicians. By the way, you can find out more about the episodes and get details at seattlechambermusic.org and at king.org. Make sure to rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts, and away we go. Our guest today produced more hootin' and hollerin' last night than we've generally been accustomed to at the Seattle Chamber Music Society. Tessa Lark has bluegrass in her blood as a Kentucky native. Her fine fiddling has not only earned her spots on stage alongside such roots music greats as the Puget Sound region's own multi-instrumentalist Mark O'Connor, but Tessa's fiddle magically transforms into a violin for her performances with the great symphony orchestras and chamber music organizations of the world. She plays Schumann, Hindemith, John Corigliano, Telemann, and her own folk-inspired compositions in Seattle this week. It's a great pleasure to welcome to our Classical Conversations podcast, Tessa Lark.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
It's great to have you here.
It's so great to be here.
Welcome back. About third season now.
Third season, second winter festival.
Very good. Very good. So you played an eclectic and entertaining and brilliant half hour of solo violin last night in the Nordstrom Recital
Hall. Thank you.
It was just wonderful. This is the pre-concert activity last night. Mm-hmm. We learned that it wasn't a violin that first came into your hands when you were a young person, but a mandolin.
Yes.
Right about that?
Yeah. When I was 4 years old, I was really inspired by hearing my dad playing banjo in the house and bringing his friends over to jam and play bluegrass with them. And there was a mandolin in our house. And so I really took to it. And my dad taught me boil 'em cabbage down as a young one. And for a show and tell in kindergarten class, I brought the mandolin and I played boil 'em cabbage down. And I remember that day for recess, I decided instead of playing with my friends in the class that I would face a corner and practice more mandolin.
Oh, wow.
So I've had an interest in practicing instruments from a very young age.
Yeah. So where was this?
This was in Richmond, Kentucky.
Yeah.
Yeah, born there, raised there. My parents still live on the same property that I grew up
Wow.
in.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, tell me more about just the activity in the household. You know, you played with friends, and I mean, was your dad gigging professionally as a bluegrass player or amateur musician, or how did that all work?
He is now retired, but by profession was actually a wildlife biology professor Wow. at Eastern Kentucky University and the department chair there for quite a while. So it was more a hobby for him to play banjo, but he is an amazing, amazing player and could be a professional, but he plays with a band called The Narrow Road, a gospel bluegrass band, and they play every Sunday at different churches around Kentucky and that region. And I did join his band for a little while at the age of 8 years old and played with them for about a year. And I don't remember this, but my dad said I quit because I was tired of playing with those old fogies. it was super fun. And there was a lot of other music just on the radio and that my parents would play on CDs. Mm-hmm. And I was drawn to classical music because I was listening a lot to Performance Today, hosted by
Excellent.
Fred Child. Yeah, and there wasn't tons of classical music in my hometown of Richmond, but because my parents were just so open-minded about what they listened to, I was exposed to a lot of different mm-hmm. styles of music.
Yeah, so you've done a lot of radio work. You did a lot with From the Top.
Yes.
Yeah,
I love working. This is an amazing organization. And I was just so thrilled to be able to play on that show. It's a radio show, now a podcast, a multimedia sort of show now for young, mostly pre-college classical musicians. And back in that day, it was just a big stamp of honor to be able to play on that show and be broadcast live on radio.
Saturday evenings on Classical King FM.
Woohoo!
People can listen to
nice.
From the top. So how did the switch to violin happen?
I wanted to play piano. I had this little Muppet Babies keyboard in the house. And the reason that my parents offered to provide lessons for me in an instrument is because I was listening to these songs on the radio and sort of picking them out by ear on this little keyboard, and they saw that I was implementing both hands at one point and playing, you know, harmonies too along with these pieces, and so they said, oh, you seem to be drawn to music. And I really wanted to play piano, but since we didn't have a real piano at the time, the teacher that they talked to also also played and taught violin and viola, and so she offered to teach me one of those instruments instead, which were easier to acquire. And so I said, fine, but I want to play piano. But then a year later, this is at age 7, I apparently declared myself a violinist. Wow. I loved it so much.
Wow. And probably had to get some piano along the way. We all do as music.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's just an ultimate, yeah, it's an amazing instrument, and I wish I could play it better, but the repertoire is also pretty much second to none.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So as you started studying violin, so you're how old at this point as you're starting to play the violin?
I started when I was 6.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do the teachings of Suzuki come into play, what are the methods that you're exploring classical violin on?
Yeah, I started with the Suzuki method with one of the main violin teachers in town, Catherine McGlasson. She's still teaching Suzuki in Tennessee now, but she supplemented my Suzuki training with these Fiddle Club books, which is where I learned one of the tunes that I played last night, actually, for the pre-concert. But so there was this great melding of different styles in my training from very early on, and I was studying Suzuki for about 5 years, and then I was getting really clearly serious about playing the violin, and it was obvious that that's what I wanted to do. And so then I started going to Cincinnati for a pre-college program there that still is wonderful to this day, the Starling Preparatory Strings Project, which is run by Kurt Sussman's house. And then he was my teacher up until college, and he sort of brought me into the soloist training and learning concertos. And there is also a chamber music program and a theory program and a string orchestra program. This was an all Saturday strings pre-college program that I took part in, and that was super informative.
Mm-hmm. Was there ever any effort on the part of your teachers to discourage or say, you know, the bluegrass, the American music stuff is nice, but was there ever any disrespect you felt towards the heritage that you came out of?
I did feel that at some points in my early teen years, mm-hmm. but it's amazing how much that has changed and is actually extremely opposing now, and it's wildly encouraged to play different styles of music. And I'm grateful to have had such serious classical training, because I think that level of technical facility on the instrument can really inform the ability to play any style of music. But because I grew up in Kentucky and had the specific teachers that I had, and because I also went to Mark O'Connor's fiddle camps at a young age and had a lot of teachers of different styles of music, learning different styles was very much encouraged. But I think that was more of a novel thing at that time, and was still in development stages to the point where, you know, I come to a place like Seattle Chamber Music Society and I'm able to play bluegrass on that stage. That was like the most high profile bluegrass playing I've ever done in my life.
Yeah.
Which is really exciting. I mean, that's something that I'm really passionate about, just breaking these genre barriers that are totally there basically for marketing purposes and nothing else, because all these styles go together. And my friends, you know, their playlists on their phones, on Spotify, iTunes, whatever, is that diverse. You know, you might have a Mahler symphony followed by Edgar Meyer and Chris Thiele or something like that, and it's not so different. So it's a long-winded way to answer your question, but I think the idea of bluegrass or other folk music being lesser than has been debunked.
Yes, absolutely. And we will break that down more as we talk about the appearances of Chris Rogerson and his new duo for violin and cello with F.A. Baltajigil and Nick Kendall, which had improvisation written into the score and all these American roots sounds. We'll touch on that. But with all this talk of folk music, I think we should play some. And this is a recording from a few years back now of Tessa Lark playing the Romanian folk dances of Béla Bartók. Tessa.
Thank you.
Given your interest in roots music, when you're choosing so-called classical repertoire, do your folk roots direct that choice in any way or influence that choice as you're thinking about, you know, what you want to program at a recital or what you want to learn or who you want to work with?
But yeah, it very often does, especially with programs like the one that I made last night, when I want to implement bluegrass or folk music, or I think that whatever crowd that I'm going to be playing for might be interested in that, I always try to program music that might have some folk influence, and that the Bartók Romanian folk dances is a great example of music like that. But I'm just honestly drawn to great music, so that's not a requirement for me. I love Brahms and Beethoven too, but they also were very much inspired by folk music. And Brahms, you know, his Hungarian dances, and Beethoven has this this sound, you know, of the people. And his, you know, his music is more joyful than any other, I think, because it is such a folk-like sound in the melodies that he created. And I'm thinking of, you know, his famous Ode to Joy theme, which is very Beethoven, but I also think it's very much a sound of the people. So I feel like that's a sound in classical music, even if it's not a folk sound that I'm drawn to. But it is fun to pull those influences into a classical program and program things like Dvorak, who is very much inspired by and an admirer of American music, or Edvard Grieg, who pulled from his folk forms. And they're just endless composers where you can draw those similarities in. But very honestly, I'm just drawn to beautiful music. So like Schumann's piano quartet, which is not so folksy, is just as amazing and brings me just as much joy to play.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Classical Conversation Podcast. Thanks to Steinway Gallery of Seattle for hosting today's conversation. This podcast is a co-production of Seattle Chamber Music Society and King FM. Bill Levy is our recording engineer. Nikhil Sarma produces the program. SCMS and Seth Tompkins provide oversight. To learn more, go to seattlechambermusicsociety.org or to king.org. Hope to have you back with us for the next episode.